Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. On today's program, we're joined by several activists, educators, and students about waking up in Donald Trump's America. We're joined by California Green Party activist, former gubernatorial candidate Laura Wells. We'll also be joined by College of Marin professor and Project Censored affiliate Dr. Susan Rahman. College of Marin student and head of the Student Social Justice Group on College of Marin campus, Caitlin McCoy, joins the conversation. Also, our student representative on the board for Project Censored, and also activist Anna Rivera of Cal State East Bay. We'll all be talking about issues surrounding the incoming Trump presidency and what it means for social justice and human rights. Later in the program, we'll have an update from Sonoma State University student Noah Traynor, who has just now entered his second trip and has arrived at Standing Rock in North Dakota to bring supplies. We'll have an update live on the ground from him. And we'll finish the program today in conversation with longtime human rights and social justice activist Jack Healy. And we'll be looking at the campaign to free Leonard Peltier. Stay with us.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We begin the hour today in conversation with several activists, educators, and students about waking up in Donald Trump's America. We'll be joined by California Green Party activist Laura Wells, College of Marin professor Susan Rahman. We're also joined by College of Marin student Caitlin McCoy. She is head of the Students for Social Justice at College of Marin, as well as a student representative of Media Freedom Foundation and Project Censored. We're also joined in studio by Anna Rivera, who is an activist and is completing her degree at California State East Bay. So we're going to hear a number of updates from these people. And we're also later in the program hoping for an update from Noah Traynor, who's a Sonoma State University student who's been delivering supplies and providing updates at Standing Rock. And he's been doing updates for the Sonoma State University Star, the student newspaper. And we'll be closing the program with longtime human rights activist Jack Healy. Some of you may know Jack Healy, who's worked with everyone from Dick Gregory to Sting and many, many others, Aung San Suu Kyi, and his most recent efforts are directed at working on the campaign for Leonard Peltier. So we have an action-packed show today on social justice issues. And Laura Wells, you are in studio with us. Thanks for joining us. Could you please talk to us about some of your initial reactions and some of your thoughts in the wake of the November 8 election here in the U.S.?
One of the things that struck me strongly, because I grew up in Michigan and went to college in Detroit, and Michigan was one of those states that shows where the institution of the Democratic Party has gone wrong. In the primary, it was a very surprising upset that in Michigan, both of the seeming outliers won. Bernie Sanders won and Donald Trump won. And then when they substituted Bernie Sanders with Hillary Clinton through a lot of what sure looked like dirty tricks to the Bernie supporters, what happened is that they lost people in Michigan. Do you know they lost people in Indiana? The Democratic Party lost people because there are a lot of people in this country who are upset about the trade deals, NAFTA, the TPP. They know where their jobs have gone, and they're not happy with the Democratic Party that has helped usher all that in, starting with Bill Clinton.
I'm happy, Laura Wells, that you brought up your Rust Belt history, because I'm from Pennsylvania and Ohio. It's a very real thing. And I have to say that Michael Moore was one of the people that kind of predicted the outcome of the election accurately. One of the few people, in fact. But I have to say that I was not terribly surprised given what I was hearing from people back there. And one of the issues that seems to have escaped some of the analysis in the election, of course, there were issues certainly surrounding the Donald Trump candidacy involving race, racism, sexism, misogyny, just an amazing array of things that defy principles of equality and fair treatment and so on in the United States. But the one thing that often seemed to escape people was class and class analysis. And there's a lot of armchair quarterbacking going on around that. But again, coming from the Rust Belt, maybe have some insight
And the way that the institution of the Democratic Party, so when I'm talking about Democrats, I'm talking about that institution. They are the ones that refused to allow Bernie Sanders to the light of day. And also, what's up with the Electoral College? I mean, one of the possible benefits to come out of this is getting rid of the Electoral College. But both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party could have at any time in the past few hundred years gotten rid of that thing, and they've kept it. But the Democrats have relied, the Democrats and the Republicans try to say, but particularly the Democratic Party, do not vote for anybody else but us. And then they give us a candidate that is obviously sold out to Wall Street, to the oil industry, to the weapons industry. And they say, nope, you can't have Bernie Sanders. Nope, you can't vote green. Nope. And people are sick of it. Because they've been lied to. And one of the things in Michigan, the Rust Belt, actually the whole country, they don't like to be lied to over and over again.
I think one perspective on this, Laura Wells, is Paul Craig Roberts wrote a piece called The Working Class Won the Election. And essentially what we had were millions of people, working class people, either not voting at all or voting for Trump. And that has resulted, I mean, less than half the people who are eligible to vote in the country actually participated. And there's been some blaming of the Green Party, but that's the numbers just don't support that. So do you think that this is an opportunity for working class people to really push an agenda that benefits everyone? I mean, we have to face the race issue and the equality issues and wages, but perhaps that's even more important.
Right. And one of the things that is significant in this race from the primary on was the role of money and the no corporate money. Bernie Sanders ran a no corporate money campaign. The Greens always run no corporate money for the candidates and for the party. Even Donald Trump, the billionaire, said that he wasn't taking money from corporate PACs. But to be told, for the American people to be told, you have two choices. That's it. If you vote, for example, the Democratic Party has made a big point of if you vote green, I mean, I've heard people say a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Hitler. You know, they'll make that equation, and that has been programmed in for decades. But then people are saying, you're only giving me two lousy choices. You know, they're not going to go along with it. And the media, the mainstream media, are the ones that say, these are your choices, period. They are the ones that eliminate all of the choices, and then people who get a lot of their information from TV, they make that calculation. It's pretty instant. These are the people that can win, and so then they choose not to vote.
So the corporate media, I see one study found that third parties really got only 3 seconds of coverage for every 1,700 minutes on Trump and every 1,000 minutes on Clinton. So it's like you don't exist, when in fact, there's a lot of issues that are very, very important that other parties are bringing out, but there's no play.
Yeah, it sure sounds like they're censoring.
It certainly seems that way.
So Dr. Susan Rahman is on the phone with us. She's a professor at College of Marin, longtime contributor to Project Censored. Susan Rahman, you and Peter and I are college professors. You and I in particular are at community colleges. And after the election, there was a stark reaction among our students. I know that we just came into class afterwards and they just kind of looked at me. I know they were just looking around and saying, what is happening? And they wanted to talk about what was happening a lot. Can you talk to us about what was going on at College of Marin and what you're doing there? And then, of course, we'll bring on Caitlin McCoy and Anna Rivera, who are here in studio. Go ahead, Susan.
And listening to what we've already spoken about, certainly class has been a big issue for this election. But what I'm seeing on the community college campus and just among voices that I'm familiar with, whether they be students that are in classes with me or students that I know through other ways, is that they're scared. There's a lot of things at risk for a lot of the students that I know. This idea of deporting people, of enforcing immigration laws to an extent that will put a lot of families at risk and terrify people on a daily basis is something that is a real feeling on my campus. Students were crying. Students were terrified. People are kind of going inward rather than reaching out. And it's really frightening. I came to work on Wednesday, right after the election, and we had a space for students to just come and process and like talk and hug and cry and do whatever we needed to do. And it was astounding. I mean, the voices were really scared. And so we had to kind of go then for the next step. I mean, I feel like we're in a state of grief. I mean, this whole election was sort of a joke from the get-go. But, I mean, this kind of just pushed a lot of people over the edge in terms of what their greatest fears are potentially going to come true. So we did a lot of brainstorming about, okay, what is at risk with this presidency? You know, what would happen if he were to do the things that he says he's going to do? And then what are we going to do next? And so in some ways, I feel like this was an opening to a revolution. I mean, that's one way to say it. We've been teachers for a few years now, and I've always wondered, where's the tipping point? Where is the point where we all go, okay, enough iPhone, enough cheap clothes from Target or whatever it is. I'm ready to get off my ass and do something. I think students are ready out of fear or just disgust with the system. So I actually, as sad as it is that this happened, I also feel like this is a moment where things can actually change. What are the issues at hand? What needs to be dealt with? And how can we all get involved? And I think the involvement piece is the piece that Project Centered is so closely aligned with. You know, it's figuring out what really is going on culturally and then taking that next step of, like, how can I work for change? And so that part of this, I think, is something really positive.
Caitlin McCoy, let's bring you in to the conversation, a student with Susan Rahman working with us at Project Centered, and hear your perspectives, and then we'll bring in Anna Rivera. Caitlin?
A lot of people in my community are upset. A lot of people in my communities are terrified. There are documents being passed around about how to make sure that you've got all of your health affairs in order, how to make sure that you've got your marriage affairs in order if you are one of the people to whom marriage rights might be rejected as a result of this presidency. There are people who are trying to make sure that other people are taken care of, other people who are now at a greater risk than they have been, as we've seen with the amount of violence that has backlashed against people of color and people in disadvantaged positions since Trump was declared president-elect. And so as a result, the group that I work with on campus, Students for Social Justice, we have decided to hold a piece in at College of Marin. And what we are hoping is to get nonprofits and community groups, organizing groups, to come and to table and to help students not only process, but find out their rights, find out what they can do, find out what happens now, because we are not going to just sit and wait for someone older to tell us, well, you know, we lived through Reagan, so you should be okay. Plenty of people did not.
I lived through Reagan, and I can't say that it was okay.
Plenty of people did not live through Reagan. And that's part of the problem, is people died. And we are trying to keep our communities alive and safe and healthy. And we can't just sit back and watch. We have to be active. And I feel like that this has become a great impetus for that.
Indeed, it's happening at Diablo Valley College as well, and ongoing. It's happening at College of Marin, UC Berkeley, California State East Bay. Anna Rivera, that's where you are. So chime in for us. Talk to us about what you've been doing and what you've been seeing.
First of all, buenas tardes. Thank you for having me. Definitely, there's two groups that I've noticed, the scared and the prepared. The prepared would be people who were aware of what was going on and that Trump or Hillary, we still had a lot of work ahead of ourselves, especially being Latina. I'm targeted instantly with either candidate, if it's from Clinton's NAFTA or the walls that are going to get built. So either way, I was already a target. And on campus, we've been pushing to have a Dreamer Center get established, and now is the time to really get it moving forward with that and the Afro Room. These are two big issues that are currently being dealt with on campus, especially because these are two specific demographics that are instantly targets. And on the aspect of the students who are prepared, we're ready to stand on the front lines by any means necessary. Whatever needs to be done will be done. And if we have to have uncomfortable conversations, we will. That's what needs to happen. And people need to start being comfortable with being uncomfortable, because the moment he was announced potential president, it was already an uncomfortable situation. So it's time to act. We've learned from it. We've had amazing ancestors show us the way and have prepared us how to respond properly. So now it's moving forward. at this point.
Indeed, that's Anna Rivera from Cal State East Bay. We are also joined by Caitlin McCoy, who's the head of the Students for Social Justice at College of Marin, and Susan Rahman joins us by phone, Dr. Susan Rahman, who teaches at College of Marin. We're also joined by Green Party activist Laura Wells. We are going to take a brief musical break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion with our activist educators and students about waking up in Donald Trump's America.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throat and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. 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 I've seen this room and I've walked this floor, you know.
Great Jeff Buckley doing a cover of the now late great Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips, and today we are looking at waking up in President-elect Donald Trump's America, and we're joined by California Green Party activist, former gubernatorial candidate Laura Wells. We're also joined by College of Marin professor Dr. Susan Rahman, and we're joined by students Caitlin McCoy and Anna Rivera, and we've been talking about the many things that are going on and the reactions to what's happening here. Let's talk a little bit more about what's been going on the streets, so to speak, maybe in California or New York, but also in some other parts of the country. And I think Anna Rivera, maybe you wanted to jump in and talk about that.
Yes, definitely. All these actions that have been taken in California and New York and blue states, as we're calling them right now, you know, they were expected. But like what's going on in Virginia, in Ohio, in the Carolinas, in the Dakotas, like what about the people there? And when I say the people, I mean the people that Donald Trump specifically targeted out. The Mexicans, the Muslims, the Black community. You know, these are three specific communities that are directly under attack. And as we've seen, there's already KKK recruitment. There's already in Michigan a middle school, build the wall, yelling build the wall to these kids. And if you know an ounce of history, you know, a bunch of these kids didn't cross the Atlantic to get here. So, you know, we need to be critical of what we're really allowing our youth to say as well, and what we're, you know, birthing currently right now. It's either do we allow this racism that has been the foundation of this country to continue in a backwards manner, or is it time to like really take action and empower people and educate people and really create the world we want to see? And what better push than now? There's no point to explain he's corrupt. This is we're past that point. Now we can move forward and actually empower people and educate them and try to support as much as we can all our brothers and sisters in Middle America, in the South especially. Like, the only thing we can do is right now, currently, is figure out what they're doing and how can we help them? Because in California, we're already well organized.
We've certainly seen the entire Trump candidacy embolden this community of bigotry. For years, we've had this movement, these movements of political correctness that talk about, well, these aren't ways we talk and these aren't ways that we treat people. But that hasn't necessarily educated people to behave differently. And that's a big problem with social justice education, why we need this kind of social justice education for people. But now, again, it seems that people are emboldened. I know on Twitter there was day one in Trump's America, and some of the pictures may not have been accurate or real, and some people were saying some of them were fake. But there's literally thousands of these messages and things that people are seeing and witnessing. And I, just from my own, some of these things are very, very real. And certainly some of the parts of the country that you're talking about, people are really experiencing these things. And Caitlin McCoy, I know you wanted to come back in and talk about not just about the actions and things that you're doing on your own campus, but ways to build a network and build solidarity with these people, these brothers and sisters in these other parts of the country.
So obviously there needs to be a connection made between students and young people who want to make change and the current system in place that is working towards change as well. And when I say the current system in place, I mean nonprofits, I mean community organizers, I mean all these people who've been doing it for decades. You know, the younger generation is here and we are ready to step up and we need support because we will not get this done on our own, though we will fight on our own if we must. But it would be best if we got the support of those who have been doing this for a long time and understand that the place that a lot of people are coming from is going to be a place of anger. I've seen a ton of tone policing on this subject that I really don't understand. It's difficult to tell someone who is terrified that their very right to live in this country is going to be revoked, possibly violently, before it even becomes a matter of law. It's very difficult to tell someone like that, that they don't have the right to be angry, that their anger is not working somehow, or that's it's against what we should all be doing, like we're all going to suddenly hold hands and sing Kumbaya. It's not how it's going to work out. For change to happen, there has to be cataclysm. And when there's cataclysm, that often means that there are violent responses. And I am in no way saying that I condone violent responses, but I'm saying that for social change, change is uncomfortable. And for a lot of people, they're going to come from a place of anger and you have to be able to meet them there. But more than that, we really need a way for students on campuses like mine to get connected with other campuses, to get connected with their neighborhood groups, to get connected with community organizers so that we can keep doing this work, so that we can do this work and be the most effective at it as possible.
Yeah, that's certainly sage advice. Is there anything that Anna, you or Caitlin would like to say in terms of the place where you could be contacted or places you could recommend? Because people will hear this show in 35 cities around the United States. Certainly with social media, right?
Yes,
people follow you on social media. I mean, anything of that nature?
Yeah, people just add me on Facebook and then we can take the conversation forward. I'm under Ana Krisna Rivera. It's A-N-A. Krisna, K-R-I-S-N-A, and then Rivera, river with the A at the end.
Right, and we can certainly post if you want to put that information. We can put it on the Project Censored page if people want to find it through there.
At this point, the number one weapon we have in our favor, which is what they don't want, and it's the colonized way of thinking of divide and conquer, but right now is the time where, like, the more unified front we have, the stronger it is.
It's going to require a lot more working together across these
on the
these
local definitely yeah. working together on the local level mm-hmm. and on the national level.
Yeah, and internationally, because the foreign policy of this kind of regime, you know, is still going to be ramped up. We're now dealing with a candidate who was talking about using nuclear weapons as if it was an option. So we've got a lot of work cut out for us. Laura Wells, let's bring you back into the conversation once again and hear some of your thoughts on these things. I know you wanted to talk about intersectionality and a few things.
Yeah, the word intersectionality is here now that I'd never heard that in the 60s. But one of the things that Donald Trump is doing is that he is putting forth a huge list of people and groups of people that he considers that he's using as a scapegoat, that he's blaming all sorts of things on this group of people, this group of people, this group of people, this group of people. I think that that has the power of backfiring because it will serve as a way to unite us where we realize that this suppression and repression and destruction that's going on is going against all of us, a huge group of us. you know, I'm looking for that, for Trump's words to backfire on him as he empowers us. I want to give a legacy from the Jill Stein campaign that people can go to around the country, and it's jill2016.com, jill2016.com/greenfuture. So that's the green future that, as Jill Stein has always said, we all deserve. With her running mate, human rights activist Ajamu Baraka, it will continue, this, the side of the people who are creating, who are protecting the water, protecting the earth. Black Lives Matter, the Dreamers, there's so much.
Fight for 15, many young people working to try to sue for climate change effects. I mean, there's so many things going on in the millennial generation, and certainly so many experienced, you know, veteran activists, right, that can be working together in solidarity in a Donald Trump's America. I'd like to remind you, this is Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. You're listening to the Project Censored Show. Peter?
I saw something at Sonoma State that I had not seen in my 23 years there, and that was a spontaneous mobilization that was organized through social media, and all my students in my class at the time were saying, there's a rally, we have to go, we have to go. And 500 students or more assembled and marched quite loudly across campus, shouting no hate. And that seems to be the main message. Yeah, okay, Trump's been elected, but we want an administration with no hate. And that spontaneity of that and the numbers that I saw, I'd never seen happen on our campus before at that level. So I wanted to ask Anna and Caitlin about the kinds of things you've been seeing on your campuses.
On campus, I also collaborate with SQE, which is Students for Quality Education. Anytime education is at risk, you know, we step forward. And right now, an issue that's at risk is, again, DACA, our Dreamer students. They don't know where they stand. There is a lot of uncertainty. So those are definitely instant reactions. And also, shout out to all the faculty and the counselors. And they're just as heartbroken as we are, but they're holding it down. They're providing spaces for students to grieve, for students who, you know, our Muslim population. Like, we have a huge Muslim population of students on campus, and they're at risk too, you know, but at least on our campus, they have a safe space where we provide students a prayer room. So there's a lot of healing going on our campus, per se.
Caitlin?
Again, we've had, as Susan mentioned, an offer for safe space on College of Marin's campus where teachers and counselors were present for students to process what their fears are with this coming presidency.
Yet so much is already beginning, right? There have been in the streets, not just on campuses, but there have been major protests from New York to San Francisco, all around. Susan Rahman, do you want to chime in here again on the climate of the campus? And I know what you're working on, of course, on social justice there at College of Marin. And how do you see you moving forward here?
It sort of feels like we're in the twilight zone, I guess I could say. I mean, I know some people were less surprised, but I think a lot of people were surprised. You know, we want to make sure that things are okay for our students, that, you know, that the police don't have now an extra permission to be more aggressive with our students. So we're doing a bit of protecting ourselves through conversations, and we're just going to continue to stay vigilant. This is that opening where there's room for conversations. And I think a lot of my colleagues at College of Marin are opening up the classrooms to talk about this. I think business as usual just had to be on hold for a bit while we kind of worked through this, because this is going to have real world consequences for all of us, and part of our daily lives going to school is part of real world. So making space for these conversations and making space in our lives, I think, for social justice is something that I would hope would be something that could be more common among people. You know, if everybody right now, as a result of this election, said, okay, 2 hours a week, I'm going to do something towards social justice. I don't care what it is. If everybody did that, we'd live in a different society. So I think making that case for everybody getting involved and doing their part is a message that I see coming across the waves at my school.
Susan, how do you think activists feel when Trump is tweeting that all the protests are by professional activists?
I think he's just pompous and mean, and I don't care what he says, just spewing hate. You know, that's not true. the activism is coming out of a place of worry, out of a place of desire for change. I wish I was professional. I wish somebody was paying me to protest, but I'm just doing it because I care about the world and I want to make it a better place. And I think that people that I'm working with feel exactly the same way.
Laura Wells, let's bring you back into the conversation. I'm sure you have plenty to add to this.
It's great that you're planning to have later in the show somebody from Standing Rock. That is one of those things that the water protectors on one side of the line and the earth destroyers, you know, the militarized police that are representing earth destroyers on the other side. And in this presidential campaign, did either candidate come out, you know, to support the people in Standing Rock? No. But have many, many people gone there? Yes. And millennials as well as elders and everybody in between. Draw a line in the sand. Are we going to protect our water or are we going to waste it? Are we going to protect the earth or are we going to waste it? This whole thing has affected the Green Party in many, many ways. But one of the things that happened after a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters saw what happened by what the institution of the Democratic Party did, they came to the Greens. They have been activating counties that have never been active and reactivating counties that have been on a pause button. And they've come in and using Facebook and getting together, as you were describing about how 500 students in Nothing Flat could get together, highly organized, very wise, just like the two young people we have here in the studio, and ready to be prepared to do what is needed. To me, the main job of the human species is to take care of the next generation. And so all of us are taking care of the next generation. One of the things that can bring tears to my eyes is the fact that I see these young people who are so young, and they're saying, we want to make sure that the kids have a better future. And they're talking about people even younger than themselves. And so we all have to roll up our sleeves and create that better future. And we definitely have the power to do it.
Definitely, yes. We have to set for, in Indigenous culture, you always prepare for the next seven generations. And on the good news is that we're the seventh generation that rises. So it's on us to really ensure that the next seven generations have water, have clean air to breathe, have access to whatever resources that they need. I coach U14 girls as well. I never saw it as a tool of social justice, but with the team I have, we talk about real issues. And we met before the election, and I told them, I looked at them in the eyes, and I was like, whatever happens, whatever president wins, like, you had nothing to be a part of this. Like, unfortunately, you will feel the aftermath, but you had nothing to do with this. So don't guilt yourself. At this point, it's like, how do I prepare for this? How do I respond? And I told them, I was like, especially as young women with the misogynistic president, the strongest thing you can do right now is stay strong and stay together and unified. And there's all these divisions within our own political system, within our own communities, that we need to end all these divisions and really look at what is important for humanity as a whole, not just on our physical continent, but everyone on this planet, because we're the ones that are pushing forth either a better world or the destruction of it.
And Ana Rivera, also, what you were saying there reminded me of so much of the rhetoric coming from the corporate media and both of the major corporate parties was so derisive of millennials. And even in the outcome of the election and the Clinton campaign, basically, you know, talking about millennials as if they were apathetic or lazy. And now, of course, the millennials are being blamed for Clinton's loss. Of course, everybody's to blame except the Clinton campaign, the Clinton Foundation, the corrupt DNC, naturally. But again, I have to say, we work with so many wonderful young students and faculty, like Nolan Higdon, who writes about millennial and social justice issues. And we see on the front lines of social change and social justice, we see millennials as leaders. We see the young people really taking that baton and going in what we think is the right direction. And we need to be crossing these generational divides, not exacerbating them and building walls as people like Trump want to do. Caitlin McCoy, you want to jump in a moment?
There's always been this assumption somehow that millennials are not politically engaged, that millennials don't pay attention to politics, that millennials don't care. And while that may be true of a small demographic, as it's true of like any portion of any small demographic, millennials are out there. They're out there in the streets of Oakland, and Oakland cops do not play. Oakland cops will come out in a group of 100 or more for a group of, you know, 25 people. So I know that
that is not an easy thing to do, to be out there in these streets, to be protesting, to be saying, this is not the world that I want. This is not the country. This is not the way that I want my life to be led. This is not the way that I want the lives for people coming after me to be led, by this bigotry, by this hatred, by this awful rhetoric that does nothing to support us and just shoves us further down. And I have combated this concept every time I've gone out to speak for Project Censored in particular. You know, millennials are involved. Millennials are there. The problem is millennials do not trust the system that is in place. And millennials have a damn good reason not to.
Indeed, many reasons. Susan Rahman, we want to wrap up this segment with a few words from you moving forward. So, Susan?
I think what's happening is, for the people who are still in the place of fear, they're immediately going to the worst. Oh, he's going to repeal Roe versus Wade. Oh, he's going to do this. Oh, he's going to do that. And what we need to do is we need to step back and really think about what actually can happen, and then how we can be agents of change and not allow those things to happen. And I think that with a little bit of work, we're going to be just fine, you know, and maybe this was the place where we could make the real changes that we've been trying to make for a long time on the progressive side.
Well, Susan Rahman, professor at College of Marin, and certainly your work at Project Censored has been fantastic. Your students equally so, and Project Censored is really a student-centered organization. We certainly invite all students that want to get involved in critical media literacy education and social justice, if that's an angle they're interested in. You could please contact us at Project Censored through our website, projectcensored.org. And Susan Rahman, thanks so much for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
I also like to thank Anna Rivera, Cal State East Bay, Caitlin McCoy, College of Marin, for joining into the conversation here. Laura Wells, you're going to be with us for the remainder of the show as well, so we'll certainly be hearing from you some more. But we have on the phone a student of Peter's, Noah Traynor, is on the phone from Standing Rock. Peter?
Noah wrote an incredibly great article in the Star newspaper and now has returned to Standing Rock with a truckload of materials for winterizing the area, and is going to give us an update on what's happening. Noah.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. It's good to hear from you. What's the mood in the camp now?
Energies in camp are high. The spirit in camp is high. I can see everyone across from left to right is building structures. Everyone is working together to get prepared for the wintertime. You know, there were certain feelings in the camp you felt after certain actions when there was lots of arrests. I don't know what's happened today. As I was coming in, I saw a truckload of people going out. From what I was able to feel, you know, I do feel the energy. People are, you know, preparing for Thanksgiving, and spirits are high, and everybody is well.
What kind of material did you bring up there?
I brought donations from many professors at Sonoma State University who gave me money and allowed me to go to a Home Depot and purchase a bunch of plywood and 2x4s. So we got some cement. We're not sure if we're going to have permission to use cement or not, but we're going to be building little shacks. We're going to be building shacks for the wintertime, little places where people can stay. We brought wood-burning stoves for the insides of these shacks. So, I mean, I call them shacks. They're going to be little mini homes for people. And these wooden stoves will provide, you know, when the weather is down to negative 20, they can keep these little shelters in like the 60-degree range, which is life-saving. It's not even that out here right now. So that's what we got going right now.
Well, Noah, I think you missed the 500-student march on campus against hate. But you were certainly on your way to North Dakota for your second trip. And we applaud your effort in this concern. So stay in touch with us. And we really appreciate that you're involved there, and we encourage the continued resistance to the black snake going under the Missouri River.
I thank you guys for having me on.
That's Noah Traynor, student at Sonoma State University, and we'll certainly be getting more updates from what's happening at Standing Rock. We're going to take a brief musical break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with the head of the Human Rights Action Center, Jack Healy. Stay with us.
It's coming through a hole in the air, from those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA. in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave of bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the street, the holy places where the races meet, from the homicidal bitching that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat, from the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA.
More from the late Leonard Cohen. This is Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips, and you are tuned to Pacific Radio. This is the Project Censored Show. Our theme for the hour has been looking through a prism or a lens of social justice and certainly human rights in the wake of President-elect Donald Trump. And we are joined right now by a towering figure in the human rights and social justice movement from Human Rights Action Center. That is Jack Healy. And here is Peter to introduce Jack to you. Peter?
Jack Healy is a Pittsburgh native, born in an Irish Catholic family, youngest of 11 children. His mother and father were teachers and a meteorologist at Superior Steel. He was a Franciscan monk for 10 years and a Catholic priest for 4. Then he left the priesthood in 68 and is now the director of the Human Rights Action Center. They specialize in promoting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, trying to get that accepted as policy in all over the world. Jack, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Peter.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And what's your take on the state of the United States with the Trump victory?
I think we're probably in deep trouble because the president-elect has chosen to endorse torture and even more, and the death penalty as well. I believe his words. So I'm hoping we're able to turn him around. You want to remain optimistic about a new president. But having said that a number of times on the campaign, I think it's a deeply flawed approach to foreign policy.
Jack Healy, thanks so much for taking time out and joining us on the Project Censored show. And I'd like to thank our mutual friend Stephen Jay for connecting us. A lot of this work for human rights and social justice is about networking, and it's important to build those networks and friendships. So special thanks to him, and I'm glad you can join us here today. Jack Healy, you've worked with everybody from Dick Gregory to Sting. And you've worked on so many very important campaigns with Joe Strummer, the Aung San Suu Kyi campaign, and you, of course, are very active in the campaign to free Leonard Peltier. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about your background, your history, and then, of course, I know you want to talk about what's going on with Leonard Peltier.
Sure. I come from Irish coal miners in eastern Pennsylvania. Both all my grandparents and uncles and so on were all miners, and we had to fight for our rights, and that tradition was transported to me by my mother, who came from Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I got that sense of justice before peace from her. And she always said to me, the death penalty is just a weapon by the rich against the poor. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way. And I had this sense of justice that was reinforced by my Franciscan training and as a priest. And then luckily, I got out of the seminary, went to the March on Washington. I heard the great Dr. King give the greatest speech of that century. I heard that. That inspired me. When I left the priesthood, I wanted to do something about human rights, rights around the world. So we taught kids, young people, basically, into walking long distances and raising money for world hunger. And we raised about $12, $15 million doing that in the Nixon period. It was a challenging time like we're going into now as well.
We were just in our previous segment talking to Laura Wells, who's still with us, the gubernatorial Green Party candidate at one point in California. We were joined by a professor and also a couple students in studio. And we were talking about the millennial generation and about so much legitimate and actual hope going on, not just a surface kind of thing, but also a lot of the social justice work on the ground is being done by millennials. So it's a really necessary and important thing to see this crossing of generations with people like you, Jack Healy, and also continuing to work with the millennial generation and young folks. Very, very important. And your website, humanrightsactioncenter.com, has a lot of your work there, and your book, Create Your Future. Talk to the listeners a little bit about the Human Rights Action Center and maybe about your book, and the subtitle, of course, Create Your Future, is How to Make Your Voice Heard from Civil Rights to Human Rights, from Anti-Apartheid to Anti-War. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jack Healy?
I sure can. I spoke to Leonard Peltier. We spent a good time on the phone. And one of the things that happened down there with Leonard, just to make this real, is Archbishop Wenske of Miami, with approval, was going to visit him in prison. And at the last minute, that visit was turned down by the warden. He was telling me about that and his right to pray, and it was turned down. So there's a certain effort being made, I think, to thwart his right to see people of the cloth. But I think in my Human Rights Action Center, what I try to do is follow standards. I believe in standards. I think if the rich and poor have standards that are equal to both, it could be a fair world. I think when they change the goalposts, the rich and the powerful and the mighty change the goalposts on those without, they become shadows in their own nation. And I don't want that to happen to anybody. I think that's quite often in history, presently around the world, too. They turn their citizens into shadows, and they pretend they're not there, but the poor are there, they're there, and they're talented just as much as the rich and the mighty.
Jack Healy, one of the reviews of the Trump victory was the idea that the Democrat Party had really warped into sort of the Davos class, world agenda, transnational capital, and was embedded in that, and that the BRICS vote in Great Britain and the vote here is a rejection of that, certainly by working people. And adding a human rights element to that seems vitally important. Would you agree?
I totally agree. I think standards are terribly important to maintain. That's why I believe in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's not that it's a cure-all, but it sets the standards and gets all governments looking in the right direction, which is actually cooperating and protecting people. And so when our president-elect speaks to the issue of using torture and waterboarding and using the death penalty, which we've been winning that case against it for a long time now, I think we have to move our country, not just him, but we have to move our country to an anti-torture position and prosecute the people in the Bush period who actually did torture and who gave the command to torture and allowed our soldiers to be turned into torturers. It was gigantically unfair, of course, to the victims who got hurt so badly. And I think we got to really prosecute anybody who breaks the law like that, especially regarding torture, because it's used all over the world. All the governments practically in the world use it, usually on a daily basis. And so the more we can fight that and make it clear that we Americans are against torture, we got to do that. We have to do that.
We're speaking with Jack Healy, longtime social justice and human rights activist, certainly working across different platforms, including the arts, head of the Human Rights Action Center. I just wanted to point out briefly that let's remember that 46%+ of the electorate did not vote in the United States, a none of the above statement, perhaps, that Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote, right? And we're left with this antiquated electoral college. So we do want to remember these things, that Donald Trump in no way has any type of a mandate to go and continue both the Bush and Obama legacy, which frankly, Hillary Clinton was also poised to continue. Wanton slaughter, bombing, abuse of civil rights at home, and human rights abroad. So I think those are important things to remember. And I'd like to remind listeners that you can go to UN.org, the United Nations website, to read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And you can go to Jack Healy's page, humanrightsactioncenter.com. And Jack has done some work on that. He's actually got some great interviews there and some synopses of some things happening that are so important with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You are listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. I want to bring back into the conversation Laura Wells. She is still in studio with us and was one-time gubernatorial candidate for the Green Party. And Laura Wells, you've been sitting here and certainly been nodding your head and taking notes. And I know you want to have a few things to add to the conversation. Laura Wells?
That dividing line, again, thinking about Standing Rock, where there are those images of people and the earth on one side and the destructive forces on the other side, that there's a lot of that happening right now. You know, the day after the election, I wrote a blog called Looking for Courage to Continue. And I looked at a couple of the things in election results that were hopeful, and found a couple. And how it sort of boils down is our human rights on one side, real people on one side, and machinery and war and destruction on the other side. And some of the things that happened, for example, Richmond Progressive Alliance, that wonderful group in Richmond, California, where they go up against Chevron. Chevron has refineries there, and they go up against Chevron money, and they take the candidates, the RPA candidates, take no corporate money, no developer money. They beat Chevron. They now have a majority, which they've never had before, but they have a majority now. And even when they didn't have a majority, they were able to go up against Chevron. People went up against the machinery in a couple of other ways, too. Citizens United, California rejected Citizens United. California passed legalization of marijuana. Now we need to make sure that it doesn't get corporatized and GMO-ified. And Jesse Aragon beat the machine as mayor of Berkeley, and he's the first Latino mayor of Berkeley and very progressive. Big Soda filled my mailboxes, filled, you know, the airwaves in fighting against what they called the grocery tax. It was actually the soda tax. It lost by 20 points. And huge money.
Yes, and Prop 64 marijuana. So, I mean, there certainly are things taking place in California and other places around the country that are not in the same vein as what many progressives view as so-called Trump's America. And these are very important things to remember, Laura Wells. So thank you for bringing those up.
It's the human side.
That's right. Well, I'd like to remind you again, this is the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. We're going to take one more very quick musical break, and we're going to be back and talk some more with Jack Healy. Stay with us. Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Just before the break, you were listening to former Green Party gubernatorial candidate Laura Wells, a longtime social justice activist herself. We're also joined by Jack Healy of the Human Rights Action Center. Jack Healy was the executive director of Amnesty International USA for 12 years. And, you know, throughout Jack's, you know, many years of working as a human rights activist, he's been very active in music and arts and the humanities. And Jack Healy, there's two things we want to cover here with you before we have to wrap up the show today. And the first is I'd like you to address is the importance of creativity and the arts in human rights and social justice movement work. And you, I believe, are among the most qualified people to talk about those intersections. Jack Healy.
Just use the experience of Bruce Springsteen, Sting, Peter Gabriel, Yusu Ndour, and Tracy Chapman going around the world. We played in 16 countries around the world. We were welcomed everywhere we went. The people of the world are waiting. There's a river of consciousness waiting for the international standards to be set by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And I think in some ways we have to remember that the Leonard Peltier case is an injustice in the sense of the case that Amnesty International declared immediately at the case back in 76 that was unfair. He served now 41 years, and you can go to I Will Leonard Peltier and see our videos. We have 11 of them up there. And on Human Rights Day, Leonard is asking all the tribes of the American nation to drum in support of him. And we're asking all Americans, as John Lennon did, to write on their hand, just with their pen, Free Leonard Peltier during Human Rights Week, which is December 6th to the 10th. And we want to show the president, so he gets clemency, so that Leonard gets clemency. We want to show the president the massive support behind Leonard and the unfairness he suffered all these years.
Jack, hi, this is Peter Phillips. I am pleased to tell you that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is incorporated in every course I teach, has been for years, and it's a perfectly moral, ethical standard for people not only to recognize and accept personally, but to encourage government and their organizations to be involved with it as well. Tell us a little bit about the history of how that was developed.
It was developed by Eleanor Roosevelt. Roosevelt, interesting enough, both candidates were from New York, never mentioned it. But the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was passed by the United Nations almost unanimously, a few abstentions, in Paris in 1948. And to a great extent, the governments have neglected it ever since its passage. And really, probably less than 5% of the world even know about it or have read it. And so my effort is to get that out. And one of the things I want to do, you know, I'm getting older, I want to do is I want to see the Universal Declaration of Human Rights printed in all the passports of all governments. So we all know the standards. We all know how we're supposed to act. We know what the standards for governance. And, you know, poor people can go and use that, much like Dr. King used the Constitution and Bill of Rights to point to something bigger than himself. Poor people around the world need the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to point to make it bigger than themselves and do the nonviolent fight and take their rights and demand their rights and get their rights and live well.
So, Jack Healy, you're mentioning this upcoming week of action in December on behalf of Leonard Peltier. And can you repeat that one website and then anything else that you might be planning or working towards that you think other people should be knowing about so we can continue to build these networks?
The Indian nations across the country will show support for Leonard, and that'll be amazing. It's never been done before, I don't think, in one cause. I think the signing on your hand, Free Leonard, could just spread across the country and show the president that the American people are behind this clemency. He's been in there 41 years. If you add his good behavior in there, he's really been served 46 years, and it's just time to let him go. The case, we can re-argue that because we believe he was innocent. Some say he wasn't. We don't know. But in the clemency, we feel deeply that it was a flawed trial. And Leonard has served illegitimately for 41 years. So we'd like to see him, just allow him to go home and live and die among his people. And that's all we want. And I think it would be a message by the President of the United States. It would send a signal, not only to the American Indians, but all the Indians up and down the Americas. I think it would be a signal from our president that he's in touch with our people who have suffered so much in our country. And this would be a great signal for him to leave the office on, alerting them that he deeply cared about them and Leonard's case.
Thank you for joining us today on the Project Censored Show. Jack Healy, author of Create Your Future. You can learn more at humanrightsactioncenter.com. Thanks, Jack Healy.
Thank you, Mickey.
Also like to thank our guests, Laura Wells, Anna Rivera, Caitlin McCoy, and Susan Rahman.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians. Cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain.
That does it for another episode of the Project Censored Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Our producer is Anthony Fest. Our engineer was Dev Ross. To learn more about Project Censored and our show, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. We'll see you next time.
Habitualized, alibis, disguised, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxes, while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity, citizens. In the times where the master thief can find and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love of the brothers in us.